Rise up!
This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. This is your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site, covering, of course, your Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host is Seth Cox from AvengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation. And this is episode 271. It is our training camp preview, even though training camp's a little bit different. We're going to treat this like the start of training camp because recording Tuesday night, the players all reported Tuesday. So it's official. Camp has begun, even though practices won't begin for a couple of weeks. Seth, does it feel like football's coming back? It only sort of feels that way to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I guess it's back in name. That's kind of where we're at right now. We're getting used to a different type of sports, and we're trying to figure out how this is going to work. And, you know, I was texting you earlier because I'm like, wait, did they report today, or is that just, and yeah, it's hard to stay with the kind of how they're going about all of this and what they're doing. But like you said, yeah, they're reporting, and now hopefully we'll start to hear news trickle out about positive things and not tests.
Right. And Cliff Kingsbury actually spoke to the media on Tuesday afternoon. It was refreshing to hear his voice and to talk a little ball, talk about camp and that sort of thing. And in this edition of the show, this is what we do every year. We preview training camp. And so some of it is going to be a little premature because we won't be able to see anything from practice for at least a couple of weeks. We're going to talk about, because the Cardinals trimmed their roster from 90 to 80 players. There's an 80-man roster for training camp this year because of, you know, testing protocol and just trying to cut things down a little bit. We'll talk about our takeaways from the initial cuts, injuries, the possibility of opt-outs for COVID. We'll talk about, well, what are we most excited about and most worried about for the training camp and the season? And what are the position and roster battles we're paying attention to, players who we think are going to surprise, players who I think are going to disappoint, and we'll talk about the players that they're actually most counting on this year and who they can least afford to injury. But to kick things off, I kind of want to go through, give a little bit of information. We know that the Cardinals trimmed down their roster from 90 to 80 players. Eight of them were simply undrafted rookies who likely had no chance anyway, and a couple of familiar names, but we'll get into that. But I want to go over kind of the timeline for training camp, because as of Tuesday, camp began, but the first 4 days of camp are testing and physical examinations. And so they'll have virtual meetings, and so starting on Tuesday through the 31st, they have COVID testing, and they have virtual meetings August 1st and 2nd. So this weekend, Saturday, Sunday, they will do their physical exams and check out their equipment. And then starting on Monday, August 3rd, that's when they start the ramp up. So, you know, the off-season program that they typically do in April, where they do work with only strength and conditioning for a couple of weeks, and then they do some positional drills before they go into OTAs and mini camps, where they have non-quote-unquote non-contact practices where they're in shells and helmets. They're going to kind of put all of the spring work into the summer. Starting next Monday, August 3rd, for up until the 11th, they will have workouts and an hour of conditioning on the field. And then they will have walkthroughs as well. So they'll basically have about 3.5 hours of work with the team, like that's physical. They'll have an hour of strength, an hour of conditioning, and then an hour to 75 minutes of walkthroughs. That takes us to August 12th, and I think that is when the plan is for them to head to State Farm Stadium for what is normally training camp. And starting on August 12th, they will practice, and it will be, they'll have walkthroughs, and they will have they're basically their OTA type, their non-padded practices. And then starting on August 17th, that's when the practices that we're used to watching, training camp, full pads, will begin. They will have a total of no more than 14 padded practices between August 17th and September 6th. And players have to have a day off every 7 days. And so there will be some non-padded days in there, but that's the training camp part. The fans will not be in attendance this year. Media will be able to attend at some point, but that's not until we get to the stadium, like August 12th. So we're still a couple of weeks away from that. So before we actually see position battles or we see roster battles, and I hope the Cardinals choose to do something that a few NFL teams do, in that when they get to their what would normally be open practices to the fans, that they would offer some sort of live streaming of practices. I know the Lions are doing that, and I know there's a couple other teams that are the Browns, I think, just announced that they're going to do it. So there's a couple of teams that are already on board. Considering the Cardinals are traditionally a fan-open training camp, I can see how that would probably be the case for at least some of the practices coming up. And so let's get started with our first topic of the show then, and this is what we're going to talk about: the initial takeaways from cuts, injury news, and talk about some of the possibilities of opting out because of COVID. Now, were you surprised by any of the cuts that they made or that they announced on Sunday?
No, I think we expected the Drew Anderson cut, quarterback Drew Anderson, because they signed Chris Streveler and basically said they're planning on using him similar to Taysom Hill, which is emergency quarterback and kind of gadget player. I'm not shocked to see him go, but you know, we talked about this last week. It was going to be tough for him to make the roster with no preseason, because now all of a sudden they didn't need a guy out there in the first quarter the third quarter of game one and the second half of preseason game four. So, I mean, not that he didn't have a spot, but he basically served no purpose in this environment of the offseason. And then Vontarius Dora is interesting just because of what the depth at the edge rusher position looks like. But again, you're talking about a guy that is really a preseason.
He's a get sacks yeah, against third string tackles.
Yeah, and so that's the thing, is he's really a guy that he gets the fans fired up every preseason, but I mean, he usually gets cut, brought back to the practice squad, maybe that type of thing. He's not a guy that typically makes the roster out of things. So really, I mean, the veterans going, no, and then we talked about it was going to be virtually impossible. I think I was surprised that they went with the big college guys making the roster over the small college guys. I honestly thought that they would do that in reverse, just for the fact that, like, you didn't draft these big college guys, meaning guys that played in Division One, especially, you know, the SEC and ACC and those conferences. you didn't draft them because they didn't really hold up in those conferences or weren't dominant in those conferences. And so I thought that they might go the opposite direction and give these small school guys a longer look-see. But it doesn't surprise me that they were cut. I just didn't know, you know, kind of which direction they would go with that.
For me, the Anderson cut was moderately surprising, but it told me how much they buy into Chris Streveler, and Cliff Kingsbury, when he talked to reporters on Tuesday, essentially said that they like Drew Anderson, but they're really intrigued about the skill set of Streveler, and he said that Anderson essentially lost his spot because of that transaction. I wasn't sure exactly what they thought of, if it was going to be a QB battle, and it looks like they're committed to Streveler. There's one player that I was surprised was not cut, and I'll take that perspective, and that's punter Ryan Winslow, because that position is normally a guy you keep on the roster when you've got an old kicker or a punter, and he's the guy that you just give reps in, and you have him punt and kick in preseason games so that you don't have to use up the reps. But there's no preseason, there's almost no need to keep him. But here, my theory is, because they did keep him on the practice squad for part of last year, is I don't know how, it doesn't tell me necessarily that they're having a real competition with him and Andy Lee, but I think they want to protect him for one more year so that he can be the punter next year. And they probably afraid that if they cut him, they would have to develop someone else, because they did like what he did. So he for me was the one surprise non-cut, because when you don't have a preseason, you don't really need an extra punter or kicker that you're trying to just keep like Andy Lee from having to punt too much. How much, he doesn't punt very much in practice, so it's not like you have to manage his reps that way. Now, an interesting fact is actually one of the best news we've had coming into training camp, and that is, while it has not been made official now, 21 players were placed on the physically unable to perform list by teams around the NFL. The Cardinals did not do so, and I asked Kingsbury if there were any players that he anticipated would do that. He actually said he doesn't think that anyone. Now, that might change. You know, coaches never tell the complete truth, but it looks as right now, they will have no player starting off camp on PUP, which is significant for particularly one player, and that would be right tackle Marcus Gilbert. Does it surprise you that they actually have no one on PUP?
No, because like you said, Gilbert's really the only guy. I mean, Alford was out, and then Hakeem Butler, but I mean, There were no serious injuries kind of late in the year that you would have expected to see that change or those guys come back slow. I'm honestly just more surprised we haven't seen guys opt out yet. So that's I think the more surprising aspect of the whole thing is that we just haven't seen, and we'll probably jinx it if we talk about it now.
Cliff himself said he had not had any conversations about that with any player, so he didn't know. It could change, but there are two players in particular that I could see, and it would be really bad for the team for either one. Patrick Peterson comes to mind number one, but being in a contract year and being 30 years old, I bet he doesn't. He's trying to win and to kind of reestablish his legacy. And while it would toll his contract to next year, he'd be 31 trying to prove himself again. And that's, you know, not as good. I don't anticipate he will. He does have a new baby at home. And then the other one would be Jordan Phillips, whose baby was born just a couple of weeks after he was signed. It was in the middle of everything when the shutdown and quarantine. So he's got a baby. But that would be, and you don't want to say, you don't want to, you definitely can't fault the players for doing what they think is best for their family in a situation like this. But it would kind of put the Cardinals in a bind in defense, since they signed him kind of as their big defensive end addition on the defensive line. Is there anyone else that you think would might perhaps fall into that category?
Not off the top of my head. That's the hard part is you have to, I mean, no, I don't think anybody would want to lose that year on their contract is kind of how I would look at it. Like you said, Peterson could make sense if he wasn't in a contract year. Yeah, I mean, that's really, I mean, Peterson and Phillips and then, you know, if a guy has, yeah, I can't even really think of anybody else that would, because I mean, so many guys are in short term, like prove it deals. I mean, or they are kind of at the end of their career anyways, that they probably don't want to miss an entire season.
You know, it would work out. I mean, work out really well for the Cardinals if Hassan Reddick decided to opt out. But I know that's wishful thinking. But it sounds like I don't anticipate. And if anyone opts out, it would probably be someone on the less significant side of things in terms of impact, I would guess.
Have they come to an agreement yet on what happens financially towards the players?
Yes. So, shoot. Basically, no player will lose any guaranteed money. Their contract tolls, and they get an advance this year of either $150,000 or $350,000 that, you know, would get come out of next year's pay. So if they were to, like Patrick, if he decided to, he'd get $350,000 this year. And then he would get $350,000 less than what his salary was due. No player will lose any guaranteed money. So whatever is guaranteed this year, and then not, like if it was fully guaranteed and partially next year, it would be fully guaranteed in 2021 and partially guaranteed. It just moves the guarantees forward. So financially, it's a good situation for the players because no one will lose any guarantees for opting out.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that's a big thing. But the toll of the contract, I think that's something that you have to factor in for a lot of players. I mean, if you're a guy like, let's say, DeAndre Hopkins, and I'm not saying he will, but if you're a guy like DeAndre Hopkins and you're in Houston still, not just having been traded to the Arizona Cardinals, but you're still in Houston, I think you could see that happening. Type of thing, you know, where you're not comfortable or maybe you're trying to make a statement too at the same time. So I don't know, but like for the Cardinals though, I just don't see where it's at this time would be an issue for them.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We're now going to start talking about what we're excited for and what we're most worried for in this coming season in camp. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Excited and worried. Excited and worried. What are you most excited about for training camp / this season?
I think the most exciting thing will be when we get to see this new kind of offense. I think dropping Hopkins in as the wide receiver one and sliding everybody else down a slot, I think is going to really pay dividends for the team, because we talked about that a lot last year, is that how they just lacked an alpha. And now all of a sudden they have, you know, a clear alpha. I mean, he's a complete alpha in the league, not just for the Cardinals. And so, you know, that's exciting. I think the biggest thing, and I think the thing that is going to suck the most about not being able to see this team practice or play, is just how fluid and revamped this defense looks. I mean, they've spent a lot of time and energy this offseason to fix this defense. So you would like to see how it's looking. For yourself. I mean, even if, like you said, unless they stream, even with writers and stuff there, I wouldn't say we have the harshest of media in Arizona. So I'm not saying that they would go lightly on them, but they tend not to look at things through the scope of maybe they need to work on this or that. And they tend to look at it as, hey, they're integrating a bunch of new players. Let's give them some time to look at things, or work through things type of stuff. So those are the two, things that I'm looking the most forward to, but also kind of bummed that we're not going to have a lot of knowledge of what's going on, or we're going to have very limited and basically what they want us to see knowledge of what's going on.
And for me, I'm excited about a lot of things. I'm super excited to see the offense. I'm excited to see Kyler Murray. I'm excited to see what Kenyon Drake can do. I'm excited to see what DeAndre. Like, I'm so excited about so many things about the offense, and I'm super intrigued about what they can do defensively. Now, I'll be the first to admit, when I see training camp practices, it's, for me, I never really try to gauge the group, because when you're playing each other, like your same team, you never know exactly how to take that. Like, if the offense is buzzing down the field, you say, oh, it's a terrible defense here, or you like, yeah, the offense is killer. Or if they're not getting any pressure on Kyler, are you saying, oh, the pass rush is terrible, or are you saying that the offensive line is good? Or if the defense is ahead of the offense, are like, well, what's happening with the offense? Or is the defense really good? I have a hard time dealing with that. That's why I like to see the starters in action in the preseason. And I like looking at individuals. And so I want to see who's going to step out. Now, what am I worried about? I'm always worried about a key injury, because they are not deep at certain positions. So cornerback, they can ill afford an injury. Safety, not really. Outside linebacker, that their edge, they don't really have any depth. And then a receiver just depends on who the injury is, because they're good at the top, and then we don't know what's after that. And I worry about, I'm a little bit worried about the lack of reps and what that could do, because we've seen, and if we go back in time, whether it's Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Mitchell Trubisky, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, and year two quarterbacks take a big step. But Kyler, as talented as he is, he was all football all off season. He didn't get the on-field reps with the offense, and so I there is a part of me that worries he's not going to be as good as I hope he could be. And the hope is, otherworldly. That's my excitement level. I know it's unfair to kind of lump in the same category as St. Patrick Mahomes in year two, because he is a special talent, but everything about Kyler screams that.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's one of the things that you really were, and by you, I mean the royal you, we were all really looking forward to getting the opportunity to see this team kind of press in year two and what they looked like. And I mean, Cliff even talked about it before everything was canceled, that they made the mistake of trying to be too cute and kind of hold back too much in the preseason. And so now you wanted to see what it was like, because, Cliff acknowledged that, okay, maybe we didn't do enough in the regular or the preseason. We didn't get prepped enough. And so now you have the chance to undo that, and it all gets unfortunately taken away. And the hard part is, with practice, and like you said, it's hard when they're going against each other. It's a tough thing to gauge. But at the same time, when you look at the reps, you would expect the offense just to be further along than the defense. And I don't think anybody here is especially worried about the offense sans injury to anybody. So any good that you saw out of the defense would probably be weighed maybe heavier than it should be, but it'd be weighed in that instance, I would think.
We're going to move on to the next subject. Coming next to the Rise of Sea-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now let's talk about some of the position battles and roster battles that we're going to pay attention to. There is one position that we all were expecting to be a battle that might not be a battle at all. That's coming on next in Rise of Sea-Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. So let's talk about position starting battles. On the offensive side of the ball, I really, like, in terms of important role, I see, well, we believed there were two jobs up for grabs. One was right tackle. I think the other is wide receiver four. But other than that, pretty much the offense is set. Now, Cliff Kingsbury says that the right tackle position might not really even be a competition. It sounds like right now that Marcus Gilbert feels great and he's going to slide right back in as a starter. And unless anything changes, that's how it's going to be. So the addition of Kelvin Beachum, depth. You know, Justin Murray, depth. Josh Jones, future. Are you surprised by that decision?
No. I mean, as much as we enjoyed the Justin Murray story last year, he was still, in terms of league average, awful. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you have to just be realistic that, hey, Marcus Gilbert, when healthy, has been good. I think the unfair portion of it is simply that he hasn't been healthy in so long that how the heck are you supposed to know if he's still good or not, right?
Right. Like, he's missed in the last, it played zero, so he's played 12 games, I think, in the last 3 years combined.
And so, I mean, and not just that, it's not like you're talking about a guy that was Trent Williams to begin with. I mean, he was a nice player, but it's not like you're talking about a guy that at his age coming back after not playing for a year is not a big deal. I mean, this is a guy that will be, or he is 32 as the season starts, and he, like you said, he played 5 games in 2018 and 7 games in 2017. So, yes, for the last 3 seasons, he's played 12 whole games. I mean, this is just – and when you have – I mean, something I've talked about quite a bit on not just this podcast but on the old Draft Breakdown podcast was talking about lower body injuries with offensive linemen, defensive linemen, big guys. I mean, and Marcus Gilbert isn't – Josh Jones. I mean, heck, he's not even DJ Humphreys when we're talking about the kind of newer, lean, linear, more athletic offensive tackles. He's a massive guy. They list him at 330. I would guess he's closer to 340, maybe over 340. And so that's, you know, And that's not a bad thing, but I'm just saying, like, when you're that heavy and you've got consistent lower body injuries, it's always just – it's just difficult to come back from that.
Now, the wide receiver four position is the one that I'm also watching for, because we know the first three receivers are set. But number four is important because of, you know, it's less important but because it's the fourth spot. But – they drafted three receivers last year, and Isabella, Hakeem Butler, Keyshawn Johnson. They got virtually no production out of any of them. Butler ended up on IR. Isabella barely played, made some impact plays when he was on the field and was open. He didn't get thrown to. And Johnson, he's a guy I actually have on the bubble this year, depending on how many receivers they keep, because while he did some things nice early, I have a hard time overlooking how his season ended, and that was the last time he touched the ball was a fumble in that loss in San Francisco where they lost the game late, and then he wasn't active again after that. That's the last time he touched the ball, and he was not active the rest of the season. It for me, as much as Akeem Butler, I think it really comes down to, can Andy Isabella do that? My eyes are on Andy Isabella. He's really being that second round pick, that speed guy. He's really got to be the other. He's got to be the fourth receiver to step up, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think you want to see Isabella or Hakeem Butler take that next step. You know, it's not something that we'll talk about tonight, really, but with this, the new salary floor type of thing, and the knowledge that, okay, if things go the way everybody's really expecting on this season in terms of lack of fan attendance, you know, so sales are down, concessions are down, parking, I mean, all that revenue factor down. And so they set the salary floor at 175. Now all of a sudden the Larry Fitzgerald contract comes into question more, right? Like, you know, if he wants to come back, it's going to be 11 million. And so the hard part has always been that there's just been nobody else anyway. So not only is it Larry, you have this, you know, this legend, but then you also have the fact that you were hoping Michael Floyd and John Brown were going to take over, and then they just never did. And so I think the number four wide receiver is so important this year because of all that.
Because he should be the number three next year.
Right. But you have to see a guy that you can go, hey, he could be our three or even our two. Like, you have to have a sense that if this is it for Larry, that it's not going to be a drop off in talent. And it's, I mean, there's never going to be the same type of feeling for this wide receiver. It doesn't matter who it is. You'll never, nobody's ever going to love this guy as much as they love Larry. But if from a talent perspective, it's close, then you're in a good spot. But it's when you go, man, if Larry doesn't come back and they want him, if Larry doesn't come back and they need him to, that's when it's trouble. So yeah, exactly. The fourth wide receiver is so big and important this year. And it may seem like almost like one of those situations where you're going, well, it's your fourth wide receiver. I mean, really, we're going to be stressed out about that. But I mean, it's not that you're stressed out about the performance. It's that you're stressed out about what is the future hold and what does it look like?
Well, and it's also not only that, it's also the development of another draft pick. Or did Andy Isabella become a wasted second round pick? And I know it's unfair to already do it, but people already have kind of written him off as a bust, and it is unfair. But, you know, they need one of those receivers, at least one of those receivers, to develop into a mildly impactful player, one that could be someone who's more than – we'll talk about Jerron Brown before he went to the Seahawks. He's got to be more than Jerron Brown. Jerron Brown, right, who was a really good on special teams and flashed, but you couldn't count on him to be a consistently productive number two or number three, and they need that. On the defensive side of the ball, there are two starting jobs that are kind of up for grabs, and one is on the defensive line. We know that Jordan Phillips and Corey Peters are there. We presume we want Zach Allen to start at another spot. They've got a number of other players who are capable of doing that. You've got Zach Allen. If you want to throw the rookies in there, Rashard Lawrence, Leki Fotu, who could even push, he could even bump Corey Peters over. Or you've got Jonathan Bullard, who played 9 games last year. Trevon Coley is a wild card to me because of his experience starting in 2017-2018. But I mean, that's a position battle to watch, and again, it's kind of like the same thing as Andy Isabella. You want to see Zach Allen blossom, but if he doesn't quite blossom, it certainly would be nice to have someone not just kind of default to the position.
Yeah, and that's what it kind of comes down to at this point, is you're looking at developing draft picks and not having to every couple years go back and do this again. I mean, ideally you would end up similar to San Francisco. And I mean, I know that's the creme de la creme, so it's asking a whole lot. But ideally, you would end up similar to San Francisco, where you're talking about an Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner, and you're going, okay, we have to pay one of these guys. And then you have that option. And then you have, obviously, a Nick Bosa, who's an otherworldly talent. And so you have two guys at the position, and you're continually kind of rotating because you're paying them so much that you're continually kind of rotating in new guys every couple of years, but you're okay with that. You're not having a drop off or anything like that. Or, you know, you develop both a Zach Allen and, a Lecky Fotu or Rashard Lawrence to the point where you go, hey, now that we have a choice, we can try to trade one of them. You know, like you want it. That's the development you're hoping for. And I think you're right. Like you want to see that come this season. And so you're hoping it's Zach Allen just because of investment. I mean, it's going to be we've talked about this. It's going to be really hard for any true rookie to break into a role this year, not just for the Cardinals, just anywhere. But a guy like Zach Allen has a year in the system. He had, three games before he really got injured? So you're hopeful that he's a guy that can come up and become an every down type of player, and then you can rotate in Fotu and Lawrence and maybe one other guy through all six, you know, like you said, like Jonathan Bullard, and then that's your team and those are your guys, and they just, I mean, they haven't had that in really a long time. I mean, honestly,
it's true. But there is one job that's probably going to be the most intriguing to watch, even though the starting job appears to have at least the base position. That's an inside linebacker, Devondre Campbell and Isaiah Simmons. That is, I think, the most intriguing position to watch. And I know the Simmons factor, he's a rookie, but dang, he looks good, and he's got the skill set, and I think they're going to limit him early on to just passing downs. But as excited as they are and as high as they are on him, it'll be interesting to see if Campbell plays well enough to keep Isaiah Simmons off the field, or if Simmons does enough to push Campbell for more than just those sub packages. That, to me, might be the most intriguing starting battle of all of them.
And I think it's something you want to see, is that you want to see the Cardinals have a good problem for once in this situation where they are having to, like you said, push. And you're going, okay, Isaiah Simmons is too good to keep out. But Devondre Campbell's not bad enough to where you're like, oh gosh, we need you to step up, Isaiah. And so that's you know, going back to the defensive line, that's kind of what they've been missing. They've been missing guys that are able to come in and step up and play at a high level. You know, you don't want to say immediately, but push for, be guys that you basically say like, hey, we want to see you on the field because you're we can't keep you off the field. And I mean, That was kind of what Kenyon Drake did, and we haven't seen that from a rookie since basically David Johnson in his rookie season, where he was just doing so much that you're like, okay, we got to find a way to get this kid on the field more and get more touches. So,
yeah, most of the rookies over the last few years have been playing by default. Byron Murphy, they wanted him to basically take over for Tremont Williams in the slot by the end of the season, but then he ended up being the starter. Kyler, they had him from day one. Josh Rosen, they totally had him planning on, you know, sitting behind Sam Bradford for at least half a year to a year. It's just they expect Simmons to come in and do something. They know he will have an impact somewhere, whether they give him a small role or if he takes a bigger role. That's why I'm excited to see that, because as talented as he is, at the same time, Campbell's a very talented and productive player. That's going to be really fun to see how the playing time plays out. Now, everything else, there's battles at roster spots. Where are you most intrigued with roster battles? Not for starting jobs, but necessarily roles on the team.
It's tough because the roster battles and kind of those spots are so up in the air right now in terms of, you talked about it, Keyshawn Johnson and maybe even Hakeem Butler, right? Like, that's probably your wide receiver 5 or 6 you're talking about, because who knows what – I mean, does Johnny Dixon give you a Damir Bird-like of performance? I mean, if Damir – or if Dixon's your number 3, there's an issue, but, you know.
Yes.
But you know, similar to that, like, I think you want to see both Isabella and Butler, even over Johnson, making that push. I'm interested – slightly to see Eno Benjamin and where he fits into this whole thing. Because I even in a non odd year like this, barring an injury, I didn't see him being a guy that had an immediate impact. But you know, he's also a guy that has done so well and always kind of taken on those challenges, so to speak, that I was just interested again to see kind of how he came out and looked. Who else? I think the safety position's interesting because we have, you know, Buda Baker and Jalen Thompson, but what happens with Deontay Thompson? And then who do they, you know, who...
They've got two, like, there's Chris Banjo and Charles Washington, both of whom have really kind of made their money on special teams, although Banjo has some good tape on defense, while Washington is basically only special teams.
Yeah, and then my next question about that was going to be, could this potentially be a spot where they use Isaiah Simmons as well? And so I think all of those things, you know, make this interesting. But like you said, it feels like the roster battles themselves are few and far between in terms of guys that'll be sort of impact guys. I mean, we talked about it just a second ago. I am interested to see who that first defensive lineman off the bench is, because I do think that's going to be an important role. So is it Leckie Fotu? Is it Rashard Lawrence? Like, who's the guy that kind of steps up into that role? I mean, there really are so many interesting, intriguing storylines this year, and I mean, we don't get to experience any of them.
Right. What's kind of interesting is that, and I wrote on Tuesday afternoon, bubble players and players that seem to be that are going to have a really hard time making the roster. Some of them were core special teamers. So you look at guys like DJ Foster, Darrell Daniels, tight end, Ezekiel Turner at inside linebacker, and Charles Washington at safety. Trent Sherfield might even be one of those guys to some extent, because their bread and butter really is special teams, but they've got guys who might be able to, like, it takes Ezekiel Turner. He was a stud as a rookie in 2018. Last year, he wasn't as productive and was banged up for much of the year, and Dennis Gardeck got kind of the publicity. He was a Pro Bowl alternate, and Vance Joseph loves it. But then they go and draft Evan Weaver, in addition to signing Campbell and drafting Isaiah Simmons, which leaves them, so you've got Jordan Hicks, Simmons, Devondre Campbell, that's three who are going to play. Then you've got Dennis Gardeck and Evan Weaver. Are they going to keep 6 inside linebackers? And it feels like Weaver is going to be an impact special teams player right away, just the type of mentality that he has. So a guy like Zeke Turner is going to find himself bumped. Keyshawn Johnson or Trent Sherfield, is Sherfield's planned special team going to be enough for them to decide to keep seven receivers maybe? DJ Foster seems to be kind of the outlier because they liked what he offers on special teams, but Cliff Kingsbury wants three backs that he can trust on offense, even though Eno Benjamin, I don't think he's going to get much run offensively. He's the guy, if he can play special teams, and I'm pretty sure that he will be able to do what DJ does on special teams, that Foster then becomes expendable because Eno has upside on offense. And it's really interesting that the very back end of the roster, the offensive line depth that they have now, a guy that Joshua Miles, they drafted late last year that they like. But when you bring back Justin Murray and you sign Kelvin Beachum, it feels like he's getting bumped off the roster. And the same with the defensive line. It feels like to me when they drafted Rashard Lawrence, they were saying, hey, buy Michael Dogby, and their undrafted nose tackle Miles Brown last year, when they drafted Leckie Foto, it said, hey, we've upgraded there too. So those guys who were on the roster last year kind of feel like that they don't have a place.
Yeah, and that's also goes back to something you and I've talked about off the air of, you can like draft picks and players and they just don't work out. And I think when you have a team that's only won 8 games the last 2 seasons, and you look at it from that perspective and go, okay, we get and understand the need to grow as an organization and as a team. However, do we really want to just hang on because, oh, hey, we drafted this guy in the 7th round, or hey, we really liked, you know, Miles in training camp and some of the stuff he did in the preseason? It's like, well, those guys weren't good enough to make an impact on a 5-win team. So let's move on and work towards, you know, being a better team overall. And so I think that's, you know, that gets caught up a lot of times for fans, is because they go, well, we just rented this guy, or not rented. We just, you know, sign
and that happens the seventh. That happens the 7th rounders year after year after year after year. They last a year, or they get hurt, and then they move on because they get someone more talented. And so it's a rough life for those guys.
It is, and it's rough on fans too, because you always want to go, oh no, this is the guy. Don't worry. I mean, he's going to be the guy that, you know, surprises everybody. And then so you buy into it, and then it doesn't work out, and you go, all right, no, this one's the guy. And so that's, you know, that's, it's just tough. I get that as fans, we want to believe that our guy is going to be the guy this time, and they're going to, you know, work out. And it's just, it doesn't always work out that way. And so sometimes, yeah, it's better to move on quickly than it is to hang on too long. And I always just go back to that. Like, if they weren't making positive impacts in an area of need, then you know, there's a reason the Cardinals went out and signed Jordan Phillips. There's a reason they drafted 2 guys on the defensive line. Like, that's just unfortunately how it goes. And like you said, when they're 7th rounders, even 6th and 5th rounders, they understand the lay of the land.
It's true. Coming up next on the Rise of Seabird podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to move on to who are the players that we think could be surprises and who could be the duds this year. That's coming up next on Rise of Seabird. We're back on the Rise of Seabird podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Surprises and potential duds. I want to talk about the potential disappointments, and these are the ones that'll scare you. So for me, I think the number one potential disappointment in this season, and as a guy I really want to count on because of the big year he had last year, and for $10 million a year, Jordan Phillips, because he's got one good year, and it was a statistical anomaly, he's the guy I think ends up being, could be the biggest dud of the group, even though they, you know, to expect him to get, you know, 7 to 12 sacks might be too much. But considering he's really only been impactful as a pass rusher in one season, it has the makings of one of those foolish signings, even though I do like what he did last year and what he wants to prove. I think he's a candidate to be that disappointment guy.
Yeah, and I think so too. I mean, it's not like DeAndre Hopkins, who comes in with 3 years of all pro. So, I mean, you hate to say this, but if he's a disappointment, it's either off field or injury. I mean, there's, from a playing perspective, you won't see that. Kenyon Drake's the guy I'm worried about, because this is a player that has basically never been the guy. And, you know, as much as you want to still buy into him, you didn't buy in enough to actually sign him long term. And so it tells me that, and while I understand that financially he probably wanted more money than he's worth,
they had just gotten burned by the David Johnson deal, so I think they were very leery about the running back money.
Right, and so that's kind of my point, is like, you're already telling us where you're at. Like, hey, we want to see it again. It's not that they don't trust him, but exactly, they've already been burned once. They want to see it again, type of thing. I think that's the right way to go about it. You just, you know, it's surprising to see that and see his expectations, which, I mean, I know fans, Cardinals fans don't necessarily care about this, but from a fantasy perspective, you're hearing him mentioned as a late first, you know, and definitely a second round running back or player in fantasy drafts, which is just, it's crazy to think about that way.
It is. A player to me that actually, a couple of players on defense that I think could be surprisingly effective, and one would be Jalen Thompson on the back end because of the progress that he made at the back end of last year. The fact that they did not, other than re-sign Chris Banjo, they made zero attempt to sign a starting caliber safety. That tells you everything you need to know about the type of trust or the belief they have in Jalen Thompson, and maybe in part that's also because of Deontay Thompson as well. But I think the guy that's going to be sneaky productive, and that's considering he had 7 sacks each of the last 2 years, and that'd be Devon Kennard. I'm really, really, some aren't as high as him as I am. I really like the match because he's been playing a 4-3 off the ball outside linebacker. It's not a true pass rusher. This is a guy who is built to play off the edge. He's made to be a 3-4 outside backer, and I think he'll be really impactful. I'm not saying he's going to have 15 sacks, but I think he will be the sort of impact pass rusher on the other side that we haven't had since Marcus Golden, because he's not a number one. He's not the sack artist, but he's technically sound. He plays with really high motor. Everyone who's ever played with him loves him, and he's very talented as well. So I think he will be a double-digit sack guy, if not really close, and I think he will be a surprisingly nice addition to that defense.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I also think that I'm slightly bullish on Mason Cole and his opportunity to kind of show that he's the guy. You know, he struggled in his first year, but he was also, you know, he wasn't a great center coming out. He was in a horrid offensive scheme surrounded by terrible talent, and you know, it showed. It's almost like he needed the year to sit and kind of relearn how to do it and learn from a guy like A.Q. Shipley that, you know, from a talent perspective, which is never really that good.
He got every ounce of talent out of him for the 10-year career he had.
Yeah, and so, you know, when you look at that, that's one of my – I think he could have a sneaky, nice type of season.
Dan Arnold is a name that fans are really excited about. I am really leery about setting high expectations on a tight end who's not even the number one tight end. Now, we've talked about him on the show before. He has some flashy skills, but I don't think he's going to go for 50, 60, 70 catches, especially since the Cardinals and Cliff Kingsbury like to run their 3 and 4 wide sets, and Max Williams is really kind of the perfect tooled player for everything that they do. That said, you know, if your expectations for Dan Arnold are 25 catches and 6 touchdowns, well, then that's a sneaky good performance. It's not gonna jump off the stat sheet for anyone, but if he can do that, I will be more than pleased. I just don't expect anything more than that. If he gets more than 25 catches, I'm honestly going to be pretty surprised.
Yeah, and I think you don't want to say it's unfair, but we kind of talked about this last week. I mean, I just don't know where the catches come from.
Right.
And so I think you've kind of hit it on the head. You can expect – not expect, but you wouldn't be shocked to see him have, you know, 6, maybe even 8 touchdowns. But you would be shocked to see him have more than 40 receptions. Right. I mean, I might be shocked to see him have 40 receptions.
Same. I would be. I mean, considering what was it they got? What? Less than 40 combined receptions between 4 tight ends on their roster a year ago.
And people will say, well, he's going to be better, and maybe he will. But again, you added DeAndre Hopkins. Those receptions are going to come from somewhere. So even if you give Kyler more passing yards and passing attempts, it doesn't mean that you're going to automatically just be like, oh yeah, that's fine right there. You know, to expect Dan Arnold to put up numbers when you have to get Hopkins involved, and that's going to be kind of the first idea.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk and the Webman. To wrap up the show, we're going to talk about the players they are counting on most and the ones they can least afford. So crossing our fingers that there aren't injuries to these players. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the final segment of Rise Up Sea Red, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the players that they are kind of counting on the most and the ones they can ill afford to lose. And you can almost on the defense, there's a couple of spots. Like one, you look at the back end, they can really ill afford to lose any of their starters at any, like, I think the one player you can afford to lose the most might be Jalen Thompson, and that's only because you don't know what he's going to be. But you lose Buddha, you lose Patrick, you lose Alford, you lose Murphy. You're kind of in a world of hurt. They are counting on all of those guys being healthy and being productive all year. Who else stands out to you as kind of the guys that they're counting on?
I mean, I think you hit on it with your Leary, and that's Jordan Phillips. I just think the amount of money that they spent and then the just glaring need that they have at that position, they just can ill afford him to not, one, be there, but two, not play up to what his contract is.
And on the same note, I think Kennard is in that same boat because of the simply, like, do we really want to count on Hassan Reddick as being the more than, you know, Cassius Marsh of a year ago? If you're putting Hassan back in a starting role, you're kind of saying that your defense is going to be rough. And so defensively, they added a lot of talent, but, you know, at edge and at the defensive backfield, there isn't much depth at all.
Yeah, and that's what makes it difficult on defense at all. I mean, outside of one of the starting linebacker positions, you don't feel like you have much to work with in terms of talented depth. And so that's kind of where you end up hoping and just kind of praying that these guys stay healthy, because how can they possibly function if one of their top, you know, say six defense, and we're not even talking about, I mean, we haven't even said names like Chandler Jones on this. That, I mean, I think that goes without
saying. That's what we're saying at outside linebacker. Even if you lose Devon Kennard, you're in a world of hurt.
Yeah, and so that's kind of where they're at right now. And so you look at it, they're building the initial talent. And I think you and I would agree that they've done a nice job of that, but they still lack depth, and that's kind of what disseminates a team on the rise or even a good team from a contending team is that, you know, think about the 49ers last year losing, you know, Joe Staley and Mike McGlinchey. Think about the Seahawks, you know, for a time losing basically every running back on their roster. And they just, I mean, they kept going. And so, you know, obviously they didn't lose their star quarterback, but they lost important starters and they were still fine. And you flip that to Arizona and you look at it and you go, okay, well, yeah, they could probably, I mean, obviously you don't want any injuries, but they could probably afford to lose, you know, if Marcus Gilbert goes down, you're not going to go, holy crap, season's lost, you know, but at the same time, you would prefer not to have to push a Josh Jones into action. You would prefer to let him be able to, you know, sit and marinate for the full year if that's what they want to do with him. Same type of thing, you know, with the wide receivers. I mean, we talked about that we want to see one of those guys step up, but I think we're, you know, we don't want to be dishonest in saying that we would be comfortable if anybody went down, specifically, obviously, DeAndre Hopkins. But even a Kirk or a Fitz, you're still going to be like, oh, no, like that's not what we wanted to see, because it's just not there yet. And I think the same thing would go with Kenyon Drake. While we feel really good about the running game aspect of things, I think we kind of, I don't want to say we're out on Chase Edmonds because I don't think that's fair, but I do think we're out on the idea of like, oh, Chase Edmonds can be the bell cow. Like, I think everybody's very comfortable with Chase Edmonds being the change of pace, second running back type of guy. But if Drake were to go down, I don't think anybody would be like, oh yeah, they're fine. They're loaded at the position. It's not a big deal.
Right. And the one area that I'm surprising, I would have said before about a week and a half ago, I would have said that DJ Humphreys is really kind of a linchpin on that line. The addition of Kelvin Beachum really kind of changes things. They have very capable depth all across that line now. Right tackle, they've got player after player after player between Marcus Gilbert, Kelvin Beachum, Justin Murray, Josh Jones. If Mason Cole isn't good enough, you can probably get through a season either with Max Garcia. He's played a little more guard, but he can play center too. Or it depends on where Lamont Gilliard is in his development. At the guard position, you've got Gilliard and Max Garcia. Plenty of starting experience that Garcia's had. And now with DJ, you've got Beachum behind him, a guy who's been a left tackle, starting left tackle for a long time. And you look at some metrics, he was one of the top tackles in all of football in pass blocking win rate. Now, it is true, he did go unsigned for a long time. He's probably playing on pretty much of a minimum deal, and he's going to be depth. But I'm actually, at the offensive line position, DJ Humphreys was a guy they needed to stay healthy, and now that they have a pretty good insurance plan policy in place.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. A week ago, or 2 weeks ago, I guess technically, but we really wouldn't have said that. But now, I feel like you said, there's obviously guys you would prefer to see out there, but at the same time, you're not going to go, oh, well, season's lost. Whereas other positions, I mean, and obviously we didn't bring up quarterback, and that doesn't mean that we don't think about Kyler Murray.
That goes without saying. This season is only going as far as Kyler Murray takes them. If Brett Hundley's the starter, then we've got issues because he's a nice backup and could be a low-end starter. But let's not this is Kyler Murray's team. That goes without saying.
Right. And so, but, and I think to be fair, outside of, you know, like three teams, you can say that about literally every team in the NFL. So we, you know, we're talking more along the lines of other players. And I think the fact that the offensive line is finally one of those positions where, again, ideally you wouldn't lose anybody, but if it were to happen, you're not going to go, oh, season's lost. We're dumb. We're screwed. Which, I mean, that's definitely a nice change of pace.
It is. And with that, we will end this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Now, Seth's going to have a little bit of time off, but we will have shows for you for the next 3 weeks. I think we've reached the stage of pretty much shows every week up until the bye week, provided that football continues to do what it needs to do and everyone stays safe. For the next 3 weeks, I'll be releasing my preview shows where I have interviewed the 13 teams, writers who cover the 13 teams. So over the next 3 weeks, I'll publish and I'll release one of those editions, one of those shows where we will go through an interview about one of the team's opponents. So that's got 3 weeks, and that will take us into when we actually have training camp practices where we can start talking about roster building and impressions of practice. So Seth gets a little bit time off, but the content is still coming. We'll be back next week on the Rise Up Seaward podcast with the first of our opponent preview series. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Go Cardinals.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Rise up!
Team Red!
Rise up!
Team Red!
Rise!